Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Michael Novak. Michael is deeply involved in voice and is a well-known member of the Open Voice Network. Michael is also doing work with Web3 and the Metaverse, and we'll be talking about all three of these today and how they intersect. With that, let me turn it over to Michael. Michael, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. I'm very happy to be here today. So yeah, I've been involved in the practical application of responsible AI for about the last 20 years, helping businesses figure out how to make use of this technology as a tool. And I'm very excited because there's a lot of really good things happening today. And there's trends that are bringing these technologies together that really get me up in the morning to say, okay, what can we do today to make it better?
Got it. So tell me a little bit more about your background, what you've been working on and your work experience.
Sure. So as I mentioned, I've worn many hats, but they've been all focused again on emerging technologies. I worked with companies on handheld devices when they first came out, and what am I going to do with this thing for my business? I've also done work with the federal government, which had the same questions. What are we going to do with these things? And I discovered that I really enjoyed learning. So I kept up with things from mobile devices, things like cloud, back when it used to be known as a server farm. Now we call it the cloud and it's much cooler. Then we call it IoT. We don't call them mobile devices or embedded devices anymore. They're now IoT and edge, and that's much cooler. So I'm at that point now where, what was it, 2014, I had heard about something called Alexa. I was like, that'd be interesting just to see what it's about. And so I downloaded the GitHub project and went out and bought myself a Raspberry Pi, put it on. And I was like, wow, this has some possibility. Now, at the time, this is before they came out with the Echo device. Mm-hmm. So it only had 15 minutes of playtime where they cut you off automatically and then you had to re-log back in. So I was very angry. Because the following year, they did come out with Echo. I'm like, oh, man, I spent all this time building my Raspberry Pi and getting it all set up and going through the code. Now, but I saw this. I was like, this capability of being able to invoke commands or start processes using my voice, and I still feel this way, it's foundational. It can be applied to literally every type of market, every industry could and will make use of voice as part of their strategy. It's not going to be the only thing, but it'll become the primary thing, just like you and I are speaking. We're not typing away on SMS or other channels. We're speaking because it's natural for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's how we all learn to communicate, and getting machines to communicate in a human way is pretty revolutionary, because every other way we have to learn how to communicate with a machine. And it flips that script completely. It's been said many times. Now the machine has to understand me, which is kind of a relief. And that has good and bad things. You know, I always say 20 years from now, voice will be ascendant and do more things. But I'll probably still have keyboards. I'll probably still have touch screens and mouse, because they all have value. They all have a reason. They're the best way to communicate or interact with technology. And they have different ways. But I do think that voice will become more and more things where they make sense will be voice controlled. So 2014, even before Alexa came out, you were playing with it. Before the hardware, the Echo came out, you were playing with it. Right. Was that your first time you talked to a machine then?
So yes, but I will, yes and no. Yes, it was the first time that I intentionally talked with a machine and said, this is a good thing and I like it. Even before that though, going back even further into my memory, I had read a book by Don Norman called The Design of Everyday Things.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Have you read the book?
I have not read the book, but I know it's one of those seminal. Add that into my list of very long list of books that I should read that I haven't read. That's pretty well known.
Yes, it is. And there's a good reason for it. It doesn't describe all and see all. But again, at the time that it came out, it was one that was just recommended to me as far as a UX book goes. Mm-hmm. And the whole premise of it, as you probably know, is he was a mechanical engineering professor. And he looked at things when he'd walk into a room and say, huh, why, when I look at this door, I can't tell if I need to push or pull on it. Because this is when we were going through the phase of putting in invisible springs and whatnot. So you'd see people come up to the door and they'd push on it and then figure out, oh, I'm supposed to pull, not push. But when you look at the door, there's no visible signs indicating, you know, this, it's just like before we had doorknobs, which, oh, the hinges are on this side.
Right.
That means I need to push on the other side to get in, not et cetera. And he took that and applied that to technology and software. Mm-hmm. When I build a screen that's got fields that I need to fill out, how do I encourage the user to understand the flow of inputting the information in the order that I want it, and without them getting frustrated because they said, well, I put it in field 12 and I push return. It didn't work. Oh, that's right. There's a field 15 over in the corner. Mm-hmm. So that book, still to this day, I speak about it with my kids. Hey, do you see that sign? Yeah. Well, over there, how come there's no sign over that door? I don't know, Dad. Well, how do you know whether it's a push?
Those are really good questions to ask. It's funny, as you're talking about when you take it to computer software, I was thinking back to way back when, right? I was on a couple of projects where they took the green screens and replaced them with a web interface. And guess what? People hated the web interface because they were used to the green screen. And sometimes the green screen was really efficient. Okay, it wasn't beautiful looking, but the way it was laid out and the tabs and everything that worked there was really intuitive. And then they built this web interface. And they didn't really think about usability. They thought about, oh, we're going to make it look beautiful. And it's like, well, no, it's a data input screen. It's not supposed to look beautiful. It's supposed to be functional. I think this is a good example of exactly what you're talking about is functionality, right? And making it so the world around us is functional and identifying push or pull. It's a very simple concept there. But
and that's why when you come forward to things like voice, again, we're having those same similar issues of, how do I get a voice-enabled system to behave the way I expect it to?
Uh-huh. And your expectations may be heavily colored by the fact that everyone else that you talk to with voice is a human. And a human ability to recognize voice, human NLU is hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, better than machine NLU.
Oh, my goodness.
And so humans, when we ask for corrections, and if I don't understand something, I can cue you and you understand it. And it's this, all this evolution has driven us to how to communicate. And yet with the machine, it's hard. So I think those are some of the challenges there. So going back to voice, you started playing around 2014. Alexa came out with an Echo. Sounded like you were playing with it. But when did you first start kind of professionally working with voice or doing something? I know you do many things, voice
being. Yeah, that's right. So, and so that's a tough question. Yeah. Okay. So at the time, as you probably remember, around that period of time, nobody was clamoring for voice user designers or managers. And while I have the technical background and can talk about how it works and how to program it, I was at a stage where I could see being a bridge to businesses or to the public sector and saying, look, let's ring the bell. Come take a look at this capability. And they would look at it and go, yeah, well, why would I ever use voice? I mean, I can type my response in. Mm-hmm. So again, it was being more of that strategic visionary of, I know you can do this now, but imagine different ways to use it. So I had worked with several small companies, both in the public and private sector. For example, there were a couple of cities that were interested in this as just a, we'd love to hear you tell us more because we know nothing about this new area. Mm-hmm. And so they hired me to come in and do a small study. And I think I got more out of it than they did because as I started doing the research, I was like, I hadn't really thought hard about this, but there's an accessibility perspective to voice that I hadn't heard at the time many people talking about. And subsequent to that, I was involved with Microsoft. They brought me in to be the lead for a digital transformation showcase. And they had set up 5 different verticals or areas. And they have their partners who had built products using the Microsoft software that they wanted to demonstrate to federal, state, local, non-government, and private individuals. Mm-hmm. And so they brought in, I think it was over 400 senior level executives to show off what they were doing in these different areas. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience for them. It was good for me too, because I got to speak with people that work with ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, and there's regulations that go back to the 70s regarding accessibility. Because when typewriters came out, people were concerned that if my vision is not perfect, maybe I can't read that little small print. And the government regulation is must accommodate people based on these conditions. Mm-hmm. And so again, that opened up a whole new world for not just voice, but all means of communication. So I took that and now have brought it forward. So when I talk to people about the Section 503 accessibility, mm-hmm. it resonates certainly with the people that have to deal with it daily. Mm-hmm. But I try to extend that to people that don't care or don't even know. Mm-hmm. So I'll bring up things like, so Roger, when you go shopping, what's the entrance like that you walk into the store? Mm-hmm. Is it one of those old revolving doors? Is it a turnstile? Mm-hmm. Or is it maybe an electric eye that walks up, senses you're there and opens for you? Mm-hmm. Which one is it?
Electric eye.
So part of the reason they have that is certainly, yes, we want to help our customers. Absolutely. But guess what? Anybody can use that capability.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. People that have disabilities or you or I who don't have those disabilities, it benefits everybody.
Right.
So I, again, look at voice and it's the same way.
Right.
I can use my voice to communicate to you as another human. I might use it to communicate to a device. And some people say, well, that's just a small percentage. I say, that's true. But even people who have disabilities or cognitive issues, they can still use their voice to get things done. Mm-hmm. It gets over that hump and it doesn't solve everything. But again, that accessibility component really, I think, will be very, very important for voice to continue to get smarter, more intelligent, and embedded into things everybody does.
It's interesting. I think it's Microsoft has this. It's a really good way of thinking about accessibility and thinking about, there's obviously people who are challenged with it at all times, but all of us situationally are. I mean, there's many times when my hands are busy, right? Oh, I mean, a simple thing is like I'm carrying up groceries or I'm cooking or doing something there and my hands now are busy, right? Or at work, right? Especially people who work in more physical jobs, our hands are busy. And so they can't, go type it in the keyboard. Well, no, they can, but that stops their work, yep. right? And prevents them from doing that. So they have temporary needs for kind of more accessible features there. I think if you think about it, because I first read about it and I started talking about all during the day, like everything I did, I was like, oh my gosh, there's quite a few times when interacting with the technology, going and running to a keyboard, even pulling a phone out and swiping is a pain in the ass, frankly.
Yep.
Right? It's hard. It makes me stop everything I'm doing. And so it gets me kind of excited to think and go, okay, that's a way to think of it, right? Obviously, we want to make things accessible for everyone. But in making things accessible for everyone, we also benefit all of us because at some point, practically all those accommodations are needed situationally, no matter how physically able we are, because we all have situational needs. I think it's a great way of thinking about it. And it kind of diffuses that, oh, well, it's a small fraction.
Right. Which
is a silly argument
anyway,
not to get into the politics of it, but I don't agree with that argument. But it's for everyone. When you do
it
those things,
all.
It benefits all of us.
And it even goes forward from that, because do you know Lori Orloff? And there's others that work with, I forget the term, the people that are older than I am at 25, who begin to need this capability. Again, this is where it does play an essential part in helping people live at home, stay at place.
Yeah,
I also do work with people in healthcare, and that's, again, another sector where voice is a huge tool that provides a lot of benefit. If I am a nurse and I am dealing with patients and I need to deal with the nursing station and stocking, it's not going to solve everything, but it allows me to be perhaps just 5% more productive than having to do things manually with my hands or direct someone else to do it for me. Because I have several scenarios that I've spoken to people about. Like you said, healthcare, absolutely. In a white collar job, I can sit down in the morning. It's 9 o'clock on Monday. Hey, machine, how many open support tickets did I have last week?
Right.
I don't necessarily have to log in my user ID and password. Oh, look, there's an ad. I got distracted. No, right. I could sit down and be reading something, reading a report, and just say, yeah, oh, there's a note here about support tickets. Yeah, how many support tickets did we have last week?
Right.
And it could come back and...
You point into all these computing devices and screens. They cause my ADD to kind of get... Because I will go, I'm doing one thing, and then I go look at something else. And, oh, you know what? The Twitter. Oh, I got a Twitter notification. And then like 30 minutes later, I go back to what I'm doing, because all those systems are designed to kind of suck you in.
And one of the keep in mind, it's not just Twitter. It's even things like, for me, Slack.
Oh, sure. I bring up Slack, Twitter, Discord, whatever.
Yeah.
Messenger. I have Slack, Twitter, Discord, Telegram running right now. I mean, it's just like way too many ways to get a hold of me, let alone ringing my phone, let alone email. You got it. And one of the beauties about voice is because it is ask, get some information, and you can be done. It's not the only thing you do in voice, but you're pointing out a great example. I'm reading and I'm looking at something. I need some quick piece of information. So that if you go into the other app, and certainly if you pull out that phone, it's all over, right? Like you're
done that when I'm reading something and here's a story, or I'm doing research about privacy and, oh, look, they're talking about the Fourth Amendment. Which one is that? Let me go look at Wikipedia. Oh, look, and Wikipedia leads me to 15 other links.
Right.
Like you said, it takes me that long to get back. Oh, what was I trying to look up in the first? You know.
What was I doing? Because now I've clicked 12 links and I definitely resemble that comment.
That efficiency is there. I mean, I chime that all the time and say voice is able to reduce that workflow friction. If you talk to business people,
right,
that's what it can do, both at the business side and at the consumer side. If I'm trying to complete a purchase, it is possible, and it's getting better. I don't claim this is a done, dead and done, and we're moving on to something else, to quantum, but it's the possibility that it will become more natural based on the situation. Not all the time, not the only way. I've got a toolbox that's got 5 screwdrivers, because some are Phillips, some are flathead, some are big, some are small. Okay. The proper tool for the proper task.
Well put. We need to can think about it and consider it. So I did want to talk to you, because we started talking about ethics and voice, and I know that you are part of OVON, or Open Voice Network. I have had John Stein on the podcast, but for listeners who haven't heard that podcast episode, how dare you? Could you tell me what Open Voice Network is?
Sure. So Open Voice Network, known by the acronym OVON, is a nonprofit association that came into being back in 2020, if I remember correctly. And it was started because a lot of these questions were coming up. Hey, the technology is getting better, but what about privacy of my voice while I'm talking to a machine? What about the security of the data? Huh? How will I manage this? And so this association, association came together as the Open Voice Network. John Stein is our executive director, doing a great job riding herd over different initiatives. So we have several different groups that are working on different aspects of voice. And our tagline is making voice worthy of user trust. And I really like that because it encapsulates in 6 words exactly what we're doing. We're not affiliated with any particular company's voice assistant or voice capability. Mm-hmm. We're platform neutral. Mm-hmm. And that's by intent because, again, we look to the hopefully near future. Well, even today, you've got maybe a dozen different voice assistants, and we want to make sure we address issues that will help everybody get better. So that's the high level.
Got it.
Now, are you interested about?
Well, I do want to talk to you about what you do. I know there's a couple of things you focus on Ovan. And in particular, and I've had some really interesting kind of eye-opening conversations with you around voice and privacy. I know that's something that you're very focused on. And something that is on the surface, I think we can all get it. But when you dig deeper, as I have in a couple conversations or heard you talk, I'm like, wow, that's actually a much deeper, more nuanced challenge than it seems. So tell me a little bit more about, well, voice and privacy and Ovan and what you're doing there.
Sure. So it's a timely topic because in general, we see a lot of technologies, things like AI in general, machine learning in general, coming together and being used for different purposes. And this concept of responsible AI is gaining more and more attention, as it should. The technology is getting better. Okay, now we have to start concentrating on how do we want it to behave? What are the outcomes? Let's not wait and just ignore it and in 5 years come back and go, oh yeah, we shouldn't probably have let it to perform an action. So within the Open Voice Network, I work with the Privacy Working Group and I sit in on the Ethical Group. And we, in the privacy group last year in 2021, we responded to a couple of requests for information from the European Union. And as you may know, they recently developed an architecture called GDPR. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And its focus is on how should the EU treat consumers' data that they type in. I'm going to do business with you and I want to buy one of your sticks. I'm going to send you my name, my credit card number, and my bank information, and I expect to get something in return. It didn't have anything. GDPR initially did not address voice. Mm-hmm. Just last year, they came out with 2 requests for information on what they called virtual voice assistants because they saw mm-hmm. the rise that certain organizations have shown in the number of people buying smart speakers, the number of smartphones that have a speaker and a microphone embedded in it, et cetera. So they were trying to get ahead of this. So in our group, we decided to respond to these, to the questions of the EU. And as I did my research, I discovered how much I didn't know because at first, I was like, yeah, that's easy. Privacy, everyone knows what privacy is. Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. And as it relates to voice specifically, it is still uncharted territory, both from a legal and commerce perspective. Yes, I can, and I got to be careful because I've got a couple devices here, but I can talk to my A device or my G device mm-hmm. and say, hey, I want to buy something. And assuming that I've given it permission and it has my card number, it goes through, not an issue. Okay. But then what happens if maybe I'm in a public place mm-hmm. and I try and order something? What is the policy if I use my voice to order goods or services from a legal perspective? If you're a bad actor and you cheat me out of my good or service, mm-hmm. what sort of retribution, how can I get made whole again? The short answer is it's not defined. Mm-hmm. Now, it gets complex because you can get into people that don't work with voice and they would say, well, voice is easy. That's just the air molecules vibrating between your mouth and a speaker. And once we capture that, we turn it into ones and zeros, and then it's data. Mm-hmm. Don't care if it came out of your mouth we're out of your keyboard, data's data, we're done. True, to a certain extent, but then we get into more complex scenarios that aren't that far-fetched. Mm-hmm. You know, what I spoke about earlier, I could be in my office mm-hmm. and I could ask, hey, machine, what's the status of the Johnson contract? Because mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't follow it daily. So I just want to know the information. And it might have to go out on its own and use other technologies to go ferret out the information that I need. And that may involve calling up the account manager, Roger, saying, hey, Roger, Michael wants to know, what's the status of the Johnson account? Well, Roger's, he's on vacation today. So he tells the machine, hey, I'm on vacation. Oh, okay. So it has to come back to me and figure out the complexity of that information and then potentially present it to me vocally. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So again, this is where it ties into existing corporate systems, things like ERPs, point of sale, CMS systems, et cetera. And that's even just one layer. Where it gets more interesting is if I'm in my office or at home and I ask the machine for information. Tell me, what's the status of my account? Well, there might be friends in the same room with me. My children might be there. They may try and be funny and interrupt me. So the machine needs to be smart enough to distinguish that's Michael, that's not his 4-year-old or his 5-year-old. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we get into the privacy issue of, if it is sensitive information, as a user, I want to control the full circle of that. Meaning, if my voice is used to instigate a process, whether it's a purchase or a simple lookup, I want to know that I can revoke that implicit permission of the machine to use my voice. And currently, again, this is uncharted territory. Nobody globally has addressed what kind of ownership or possession do you have from a privacy perspective over how your voice is accepted, used, stored. It's undefined currently. So part of our purpose in life is we are putting together principles to try and address these different concepts of what should we do? Because we're at a good spot right now. It's there's still time for societies to figure out what do they want the policy to be. So I can go on, but that's
I think it's fascinating. And one of the aspects you talked about is you ask about the Johnson report and then it responds and others could hear it. I was thinking as you were saying that, there's a bunch, there's all kinds of authentication. Well, if I want to use my laptop or my phone, I go, there's a password, there's two-factor, all these things to make sure that I am who I say I am before I see this information, which is fine. But my phone or my laptop are essentially one-to-one devices. I'm in front of them, I can share them, but typically it's one-to-one. Voice is inherently one-to-many. I can ask my voice assistant something and anyone else with an earshot can hear it. And so you get in this complicated thing of, okay, well, are they authorized? I ask it, but who else is around? And this gets into privacy. Should the voice assistant know who else is around? Okay, well, now we have a privacy issue because now the voice assistant knows that my kids are within earshot. Theoretically, none of them have this capability yet.
Sure.
But they could. Now it has all this location data. And I'm just like, I just want to know about the Johnson report. I don't want you to know where my children are. Or my spouse is, or my friend.
And that works in a business scenario as well. You know, absolutely. Again, I could be in an office someday after pandemic, but I could also be out in the field in a public place. It's lunchtime. I took a break and my lunch doesn't correspond to yours. So I could be at a restaurant and somewhere else and I get this information. Now, again, the good news is I still have control and I could decide to tell my device, send that to my email or show it to me on my screen. But again, the device needs to be intelligent enough to interpret my change. Because, well, he asked for it by voice. So my default is I always provide it back in the same channel. So now as a user, I need that capability
right,
to take a shortcut and say, no, 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 I'm in the bus. I don't need to know that I've got COVID-28. Send me a text message. Don't announce it, please.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So again, this is where we get into these more complex issues of how voice is treated as data. Now, there's other aspects as well. You spoke about the biometric perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is very interesting because during the pandemic, there were several organizations and some universities that developed tests. So they would have you speak for as little as 15 seconds or 30 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't diagnose you. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they look for certain biometric
mm-hmm.
markers that mm-hmm. are inherent in your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go in the back and look at big data and say, yeah, he's at a 20%. He may have COVID, and come back to you and say, we suggest you go see a professional to ensure this works. There's a doctor in Spain
mm-hmm.
who's a cardiac surgeon, and he developed a test using voice
mm-hmm.
to test people for risk of cardiac arrest.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. And it was successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then he enlarged that and said, oh, let me go talk to the neurologist. And they ended up developing the ability to test not only for physical conditions like markers that indicate you may have COVID,
mm-hmm.
you may have pneumonia, but mm-hmm. also things like Parkinson's disease,
mm-hmm.
things like depression, emotional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A whole mm-hmm. gamut of physical conditions. And that's just in the healthcare space. Again, the voice, unlike your fingerprint, your face print, is a very rich medium.
Yes.
And there's a lot of information that we hear. If I never saw your face, I could probably guess your race and your age and potentially where you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always make fun of people, of course, who say Wooter. It's a very well-known section of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
If you say Wooter, I know that's where you're from. And yeah. I bet you say, you call that sugary drink a pop, not a soda.
No, it's soda.
I'm a soda. So you must have lived out east sometime.
Oh, no, no, no. California, it's a soda. West Coast, it's a soda. Yeah. Pop is a southern, the south.
I grew up in Seattle. It's a pop in Seattle. So there you go.
California.
So I learned something new. This is what I'm talking about is you can pick up these signals from the word you use, how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
And that provides a rich resource for both the medical professionals, but also as humans, we inherently hear those little details
mm-hmm.
and we form mental pictures of what you may look like if I haven't seen you, et cetera. And the machines do that very well. Now, they don't know anything about soda versus pop, but they would pick that up
mm-hmm.
and then it would be up for that human in the loop to mm-hmm. look at the data and go, oh, so this one is definitely from Seattle because he calls it a pop.
Right.
But I know, and if he goes to Virginia and says pop, he's going to get a pop all right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Voices. Well, no,
and everything's a Coke in the South.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yes.
You know, I think even no matter
what type of Coke do you want?
Yeah, exactly. I think, is it the New York Times? There's a website out there that speaks and it asks you, I don't know, 10 or 20 questions about how do you pronounce these things?
Yes.
What words do you use for things? And it is eerily accurate about like where you're from.
It's not eerily. It's based on science.
Yeah. So, well, it is. It is not eerily. You're right. Wrong term. Although, if you know, it's based on science, it's linguistics. My local newspaper ran this thing about how you can tell regional areas. I grew up north of San Francisco. I now live east of San Francisco. And there's a word, Ignatio versus Ignacio, right? Different pronunciation.
Yes.
That tells people whether I grew up here. The way people, where I live right now, they pronounce it differently than where I grew up.
And you call it the I-5, don't you?
The
I-5, you have the pronoun.
Yeah.
In Seattle, it's just I-5.
Yeah. It's amazing. You can get down to these things there, which gets to the point, I think this is all very powerful.
It gets back to the privacy. I mean, it's the individualism.
It does. Like,
does voice get used? And again, from a privacy regulatory perspective, what type of regulations should be applied to voice. Because again, I have conversations with people here in what we call the DMV, the District of Columbia, yeah. Maryland, and Virginia. And I'll talk to my friends over that are data scientists and machine learners. And they'll say, oh, voice is just the interface. All that's being done inside the model. We have a data model and that's where all the power is. Okay. So then I'll ask them a question. So ask me what 4+1 is. I'll let you go ahead, Roger. Ask me what 4+1 is.
What's 4+1? Or am I supposed to answer? 5.
No, it's 5. Yeah. So ask me again.
What's 4+1?
It's 5.
Oh, yeah.
Now ask me again.
What's 4+1?
It's 5.
Yep.
So right there, I've given you 3 different contexts mm-hmm. of what am I saying? The data mm-hmm. value is always 5. It's never a million.
Right, right.
But can you remember what those 3 contexts are?
Let's see. You were what was the first one? I know the second one, you were sad.
I was going to test you. Yes.
The third one, you were kind of smirking, like who wouldn't know that?
Sarcastic.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm forgetting what the first one is.
Absolutely. And it's not, and again, it's even more than emotion. It's contextual. It's a case of maybe I'm just in that happy mood. Mm-hmm. So I want to be trivial. It's 5. As humans, we get this. We got it.
Totally.
My point is that currently machine learning does not capture
yes.
that aspect of voice. Therefore, until someone can prove me wrong, and I'm open to listening to people's contrary beliefs, mm-hmm. voice is special because it has that ability to express more than just a data value of, look, the light went on, the light went off, light went on, light went off. Well, mm-hmm. I know when the door is open, the door is closed, lights off, doors open, light. Voice is a very rich medium we haven't finished solving yet. And that's why I get excited, because we're doing much better than we were 5 years and 10 years ago, but we still have a ways to go. And I'm excited by the opportunity to help move that forward by addressing things like privacy and bringing that to people's attention and say, look, here's one data point, literally, of where privacy is important, because it's not just me and I feel my voice is important to me and you shouldn't have it. This applies to everybody mm-hmm. because once I speak, I don't have control over my voice anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't capture back a sound that I've issued.
Yep.
And that gets me into synthetic voice too, but we can talk about that.
It's interesting as you're talking, I was thinking about, it's amazing. So you're talking about where you could detect if you had COVID or all these other diseases via voice. And I've heard these amazing things and or emotion right there. But I was thinking about that. So that's great. I actually want my doctor to know. I want preemptively, if it seems like there's something going on and hasn't detected, I want myself to know and my doctor and a limited number of people to know. But I don't want to reveal all my medical issues necessarily to my employer
right.
or necessarily to my insurance company. There's this kind of very cool technologies that can detect all these things, but who gets to use them, right?
Exactly.
And
this is what we're trying to address with open voice, is we're not going right. to give an answer, but we're trying to surface this and say, look, this is not just a conversation you have because I have nothing else better to do. These are issues that are, I mean, we've seen this globally with yeah. states, cities, and countries that have started using facial identity. Somewhat facetiously, we've discovered that's sensitive, that people don't necessarily want their face to be recorded for yes, getting on an yes. airplane here in the US. Who would yep. have known? But they're more than willing to put a fingerprint. Again, it comes back to social values and cultural mm-hmm. values. Voice is no different. And because we look at that growth of the number of smart speakers and mobile phones that have this capability, we can even look at this other sphere called the Internet of Things. So there are commercial companies building buildings that have embedded speakers and microphones in them, mm-hmm. or they have the electric eye that can see people walk by, and they have microphones. Mm-hmm. This is not meant to be to scare people. It's meant to make them aware of why voice is a critical component mm-hmm. we as society, whether we're here in the US or in the EU or anywhere else in the world, we need to decide how do we want to treat
yes.
the voice?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what permissions should I be allowed? Or when should I be allowed those permissions? And then we get into, okay, so let's imagine we have regulations regarding voice,
mm-hmm.
a natural voice.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when I finally die?
Mm.
What happens to my voice then? I mean, we certainly have
mm-hmm.
a generation or two that are now used to the web. Hey, look, there's a dead dog. Hey, look, there's a piece of paper. And they take pictures of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's all up on the internet. And I don't know in 10 or 15 or 20 years whether that will be a good thing or a bad thing to see literally every single moment of your teenager's life captured online. Because
mm-hmm.
it never goes away. It's... Mm-hmm.
You sound like a conversation I've had with my teenagers about.
And
like,
me too.
What you post is living forever because they don't think that way. They're like, I'm just sharing it with my friends. And
so again, your voice is part of that. If I'm absolutely. Even taking a short movie, I'm capturing your voice at that point in time. But then the good news is, so I die and I've got these memories. I can look back and listen to my father or my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those are individual instances. They're mm-hmm. anecdotal. That's nice. But then now if I'm using my voice to ask for the Johnson report, what happens if that's a contract to corner the market on pencils?
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
maybe there's a lawyer or a judge who wants to admit that as evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, again, I can think up several scenarios where voice could play a key part mm-hmm. in legal proceedings all over. And again, from a privacy perspective, if I want to gain entry to a, what do we call those things? Oh, yeah, a tavern. I do know children who have gotten fake driver's licenses, right? I show up and I show them this sure. picture. It's yep. my picture. Yep. But if somebody who has an age that's over 21, they get let in. Great.
Right.
Well, what about if I had to use my voice to validate? As again, as part of a multi-factor, I'd show mm-hmm. a picture mm-hmm. which says I'm from that state and I'm 21, but then I have to authenticate it with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to the biometrics, it would say, uh-uh, you are not right. 18 yet. But again, this is all untested. So
yes.
privacy, absolutely, positively, needs to be addressed globally.
It does. And I would say that globally, our expectations of privacy vary.
Absolutely.
We're hitting her in the US and we're talking and we have our expectations. Europe has different expectations. China has a completely different set of expectations.
And again, it's not even just Europe. I think about this and keep in mind, Europe is not Europe. It's made up of multiple countries. And
yes.
I can say the same thing about the, we have state laws. And some of them address it through California and Virginia. They have consumer protection laws. There's a couple states that have addressed privacy from a different perspective, mm-hmm. where they've gone after the biometrics and said, mm-hmm. we want to protect your biometrics, whether it's a face or a fingerprint or a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this mosaic. And again, is that wrong? No, but we're still at that immature layer where, you know how hard it is to do business if I have 50 different tax laws that I have to abide by. Oh, you're in Oregon, I charge you 4%. You're in California, you get 2%. You're in New York, you're 100%. So again, privacy is, and voice privacy specifically, is going to continue, I believe, to be an issue that will get addressed hopefully sooner than later, because this is the right time for that responsible AI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do also work, besides with Open Voice, I just finished helping write a paper for a nonprofit that works with the federal government. It's an organization called ACT-IAC, mm-hmm. A-C-T-I-A-C.
Mm-hmm.
And in their case, they were focused on safety and security of AI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was an interest. It was a good exercise for me because I live in a voice world. And when I talk about privacy and security and safety, I'm thinking voice privacy, voice safety, sure, voice security. Working with this other group was refreshing because they looked at it from a different perspective and made me have to rethink some of my premises about, for example, safety. And this is one of the areas I worked on with them to develop a white paper. The purpose of this white paper is so then public officials in the federal and state government say, yeah, we need to address AI privacy, safety, and security. Mm-hmm. They have at least one reference document they can start with to begin to learn what does that mean.
Right.
And I tried to inject to the point that it was appropriate. Yeah, keep in mind, again, we have AI, privacy, safety, security. Keep in mind that there is voice, privacy, safety, security mm-hmm. that might be slightly different and needs to be right. accounted for. And I found some use cases in the federal government where they were using ASR, automatic speech recognition, mm-hmm. for first responders. So I found another case where they were looking through the Federal Register, which for those of you that don't know, is considered the newspaper of the federal government. Anything that goes on gets written to the Federal Register. In their case, they had literally a million pieces of paper and documents they had to sift through mm-hmm. to determine which one of these things are appropriate for my department or my team. In the old days, they would sit someone down. Okay, hold on. And he would look this up on the website and have to read all of these. What they did as a pilot is they used a version of GPT-3. It wasn't GPT-3, mm-hmm. but it was a different version of it to look through all these comments and mm-hmm. group them by theme.
Sure.
So now me as the human, I could sit down and say, all the blue ones have to do with this. The green ones have to do with that. And it helps them do their job in a right. week, not right. a month. So again, there's a lot of things going on, but again, it's not called voice. It yeah. was called ASR in one case. And I forget what they called it for the GPT-3. They had a different term they used. But anyway, so there's things going on, but I'm excited because I see these one or two mm-hmm. one-offs of looking at voice. But again, we still need to address this.
Mm-hmm. So. As you're pointing out, the technology is incredibly powerful. We are talking about the GPT-3. I mean, what you're doing, you're taking text and you're applying NLU to it so it understands it. And so then my input can be natural language, and the return, it can figure out, well, what's relevant to it, which is incredibly powerful, incredibly useful there. Incredibly flawed if you've ever used GPT-3 that doesn't work always so well, which shows, I always say the AI is incredible what's been done, but it's rudimentary what's been done because it's incredible what we can do, but there's so much more that we should be able to do. So
we will. Not should.
We shall.
It's just, again, we're at that, version one of the web. Hey, look, I have a blog. Are you some sort of techno weirdo? Because only the server admins I knew ever wrote blogs back in the day. Exactly. Now, teenagers, hey, I got up this morning. I'm going to write a blog. Okay.
Exactly. Or I'm going to record. Now, it's not write a blog. I'm going to record a TikTok video. I have two teenagers. It's all about TikTok, baby. It's all about TikTok. Hey, I wanted to change gears a little bit and touch on Web3 and the metaverse. I know both of you and I have both been doing quite a bit of work there. I've been doing lots of my own work on the side and getting pretty deep. And I think it's exciting and interesting. But one of the things that I notice is that you talk to the Web3, metaverse, NFT people, and you ask them about voice, and they're like, "What? Don't know anything about it. BS. You talk to the voice world, they're like, "Oh, I don't know anything about that stuff. BS, right?" And I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. I think you're both wrong. They're both valuable and they're both advancing forward very quickly." But one of the things that you and I have talked about a little bit in the past is how they're not separate things. There is some marriage there. And I wanted to get your thinking and thoughts around that.
Yeah. Again, this is where being focused on that practical application of responsible Apple AI and technologies. I did work for a large database vendor for a very long time. Blockchain came easy to me. Mm-hmm. The concept of, oh yeah, this is how things are put together and this is how you can do things technically. Yeah, that makes sense. And I see it does have value over what existed prior to that. Now, again, like voice, it is still in the early adoption stage. By no means is it done, let's move on. No, it's continuing to evolve, which currently the term is Web3. The first version of the web was, I've got static web pages that I can show information on. That's it. Version 2 allowed people to actually enter data into fields on a screen. So there was some interaction. This concept of Web3 is, okay, so I'm able to interact with you now over a video line. This is still considered Web2. Why? Because it's not interactive. You're still a two-dimensional character to me, just as I am to you. And if I were to go over here on my screen to a different web browser and open it up, you wouldn't see it. And I could allow you to see it, but I'd have to, okay, let me see if I can get this to work. You know, it's not easy. So this concept of Web3 is, how do we bring these technologies together? Not because it's cool and we think you just want to try it out. No, there's business that can be had. And there's social good that can be had if I'm able to have a distributed ledger that the blockchain is built on, so that there's less need for oversight. The transactions, I tell people it's like a spreadsheet. When I enter things in, it's one line at a time. And the difference is that, unlike a Excel spreadsheet, perhaps, I can't go back and erase a previous entry.
It's true. Thousands of copies of that Excel spreadsheet, actually.
And that's the whole point, is I write
exactly.
It. And then it gets distributed out to as many people or organizations as participate. So
one of them. The consensus would say, you know what? Nobody else sees this data here, so that's not valid. So there's correct. We can get in a whole distributed ledger, and I don't want to go down that. That's a whole,
right, I was just gonna give a whole the high
path
level.
Of very interesting stuff. And probably a whole separate, could be many hour conversation in and of itself. But one of the things.
But that's where I see that at one level. But there's also these other technologies coming into play that we had talked about the most. Well, let's see, this is, well, last year's news, NFTs, non-fungible tokens. That's so 2021. But it's the concept of, what if I wanted to show that I had ownership over something?
Right.
And I didn't want to have to pull out a piece of paper that was notarized by a notary and signed 3 times, because I have that one single piece of paper. But again, if it gets lost in a house fire or stolen from my place of business, I then have to go find the other copy the bank has.
But
I could do this electronically, and therefore I could show ownership over an asset or a thing. Currently with NFTs, art is big. Yay, I've got a picture, and I, can you say legally own with an NFT? I don't know if it's been proven in court yet, but I can say that I own this piece of art.
I believe there's been a transaction. So I paid, a ledger. It's really a distributed ledger. Saying,
but I'm thinking about the NFT, though. I don't think it's been proven
paid,
in court.
But I paid 0.1 ETH for Michael's drawing. And now I have some rights to that drawing, but the NFT itself, and this is another ball of beeswax.
Yes.
I can go down.
But we're talking about Web3, but this is the
ownership.
Web3.
But there's on this distributed blockchain, we know that I achieved some rights to that. Now, what those rights are is not decided actually.
Again,
NFT. It's a different thing.
Where voice comes in, because voice is the third component where currently there are companies, and you've heard of, what is it, the voice NFT? Voice, what is it? I forget the name of it.
There's a couple of people doing things with voice NFT.
Yeah. So it's not just a physical picture. There are people that are saying, yes, I've got this sound clip and I want to show ownership over it. Therefore, I will purchase it and show ownership with that NFT by paying money.
I think the other way it happens is then if you tack the kind of sister I wouldn't call this a technology. I wouldn't call the metaverse a technology. I call it a...
Well, that was my next
an step. Ecosystem. But it's the whole thing of, okay, if I go and I enter any of these, if I sandbox it to Decentraland or in any of these things, I create an avatar, right? And I can make the avatar look however I like it. But what I don't have, and I can speak in these too, right? They usually, you can use your mic there, but this gets into this synthetic voices.
Yes.
Creating a synthetic voice, right?
Or the option to, you know,
the again, option to.
I can go into that gaming space. Currently, gaming is where this metaverse concept got its start of what if I could be immersed in a world, not just looking at it, but look around. So there's some companies that have goggles, but that's not always the case. There are others that are doing this through a computer screen.
The metaverse, that idea has existed for a long time in games.
Yeah,
I will argue to these metaverse builders, and I'm like, the original metaverse building thing, and maybe not even the original, but an early one, was Minecraft. Minecraft is absolutely the metaverse. My kids can create their worlds, and they can go visit their worlds, and they can see each other. That is out. That is very metaverse-like. Nobody called it that. It was this game.
That's right.
Right.
That's
and many of these games are these 3D things, and you can see all the players, and that's that. There's no different, right?
Now let me ask you this: what would you call this Doom metaverse?
I don't know. That's
was that before your time?
No, but it wasn't multiplayer, right? There wasn't. There wasn't. So is a single entity?
I guess, yeah, I guess you're right. That's true.
I kind of think of the metaverse, and maybe this is not there. I kind of think of it as one of the definitions of it, is it's a virtual world where there are other people represented in the virtual world that I can interact with. And I so I think of the game that. One-on-one is probably that. But once I can interact with other people, aka Minecraft, right, which has been around for a long time.
Yes, yes.
That's the metaverse. Yes. But I think in emerging, and you're talking about these voice NFT, and not only that, but there's a couple are there of around, okay, I want my avatar, but now I want my own voice. I want this correct. And I want this anonymous voice, this voice that's completely different than me.
Synthetic, artificial. Synthetic, and this is where I was going with this, is in these worlds, you can be in them. And currently, there are companies that are allowing you to buy virtual land, like you have squares 5 through 12 and nobody else can build on them. They might be able to walk on them, but that is yours and you have something that proves you own it. Great.
Right.
And now companies are consumer focused companies are getting involved saying, well, so if you've got a piece of virtual land, what if I put up a virtual restaurant and sold you a virtual meal? Now, of course, in meta world, metaverse, I'm not going to have to eat it. But again, coming back to the consumer side, the vendor now knows you were there and that you purchased a good or service from them. Mm-hmm. And as a reward or as compensation, they may give you access to something here in the physical world.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So it's not just... Mm-hmm. Why would I care? It's all virtual, doesn't exist. Well, no, they would link it back to encourage you to come back. So there's that affiliation capability at a commercial level. But then if I'm in this virtual world, maybe I don't want to wear my shirt. I want to be in Hawaii, so I want to have a Hawaiian hat. And maybe I want to have a tan and I want to shave my beard. And maybe I want to have a different voice today because I feel like having a different voice. So again, the voice just becomes an attribute that I could change as often as I change my socks.
Yes, which has interesting implications.
Absolutely.
Which we haven't figured all these out. Like, what is this virtual being that I can create, which can be very different than who I am?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's interacting with other virtual beings that have a human behind them. And what are all the implications behind this? And it's the physical look, it's the voice, it's everything there. I bring it up because I think it's probably, it's a brave new crazy world that we haven't all figured out, even though it's not as new, like I was saying, because I think metaverse-like environments have existed for a long time, but now there's a greater focus on it. When it came out of the gaming world, and it hasn't fully, because most metaverse things are still games, then people start thinking of all these things that sometimes the gamers, well, either they've already figured it out, or it wasn't relevant to the gameplay, and so it wasn't important for them to figure it out. But as we do more and more things there, or explore what we can or can't do things, or what it makes sense. because I think it's
another But the other thing I bring up is that it's more than just gaming. A lot of people look at it and say, oh,
absolutely.
I don't have a joystick. Oh. I don't do that. It's just for kids. And the answer is, oh, heck no. This is where, who was it? There's a company I spoke with a few weeks ago. They're in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, they may have used a technical drawing drawn by an architect, or they may have used CAD/CAM to develop something, you know, using a computer and some program. But now what they're using is a metaverse environment. And because of the increase just in the power of the chips, the technology chips, mm-hmm. but also the sophistication of the AI routines, they can go in and say, you know what? I am a manufacturer and I build five different models of telephones. And I want to do this most efficiently. Where do my machines need to be on the floor? Where do I need to have the supplies to furnish or to supply? And they can build this virtually in a metaverse and then go through scenarios of what if line one goes offline, what's going to happen? Right. So again, this is not just for games. This is where businesses can do it. Education. I could pretend I'm a water molecule.
Yeah.
Something that, and I've had this conversation with businesses. They say, well, it's just a digital twin. I've got a physical machine and I take the data off that physical machine and feed it mm-hmm. to this digital twin so it imitates what's in the physical world. Absolutely true. But the metaverse, the difference is the metaverse is not constrained by physics or laws. So I could be that water molecule that goes through the fan blade and show the engineer, look, now I can redesign this because now I know, I see what happens if this condition is true or if it's not.
Totally. Educationally or learning or manuals. I mean, probably the biggest customer for these kind of technologies that I'm aware of is the military, actually, which gets, they're spending, which is a whole, that's a whole other ball of beeswax. Yeah. But they're spending huge amounts of money. Microsoft's big at HoloLens, which does that.
Yes.
They have $10 billion thing with the military. And if you think about what the military needs to do in simulation, how they want to train people, this is a big business for them. But anywhere, you're absolutely right, where there's needs for education, see it in a virtual way.
In immersive.
Be able to understand it in a different way. You could be the water molecule going through the pipe system and simulate that. Which then would lead to better design, better troubleshooting.
Remediation. Think about this, that if my car, assuming I have a car, and it breaks down, well, what's the problem? I don't know. I do this, and it doesn't start. Oh, well, hold on. Let me pull up the model of your engine and your infrastructure, and let's go through that path.
Yeah.
Literally go, oh, look, there's an obstruction here at valve 12 or in your carburetor or whatever. So then what's the answer? How do I fix it? Here, we got a procedure.
And here we go. And I know how to do the procedure because I learned how to do it virtually. Right now, I'm getting my hands dirty. Well, listen, I think we could go on and talk about this for a long time, but I do want to start wrapping things up. But before I wrap things up completely, one of my favorite questions to ask guests is to ask a kind of a voice or an audio experience, could be something audio, like we're in a world of audio, that you like or use that you think is very cool or useful or fun, but not enough people know about. Kind of my hidden gem question.
So I could speak about using my voice to instruct my teenage sons and they never do what I ask them to. Would that be considered a valid answer?
Well, if you could figure out, hey, I have teenage daughters. If we can figure out, I like this answer. We all use it and it doesn't work. You're making me laugh, but if someone can figure out, like, actually, what happens if there was a bot that was a virtual teenager and you could practice being a parent on it and it would have all the attitude and all the comebacks and you could figure out, like, oh, this is the best way to talk. Or maybe it could even cue you in, right? Because my I don't know about my kids love to use acronyms or love to use terminology.
OMG, my BFF. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It gets all crazier. I know some of those, and they love to use it because they're like a boomer. Anyone over 30 is a boomer.
That's right.
Boomer doesn't understand. And they love it. But I was like, so I don't know if you answered the question, but you gave me an idea. Somebody should create a virtual teenager for parents to learn how to communicate with teenagers. I mean,
now, of course, you know what the second thing is?
I'm joking, but I'm half serious.
You know what the second thing is that they'll build after they build the virtual teen? What did you say?
Virtual teenager.
Virtual teenager. The second thing they'll build is the virtual parent. So the virtual teenager can figure out how to get around the virtual parent again, because that's the whole objective.
There we go. So let's
I've got multiple sons.
Let's not fight. Let's let our digital twins fight in the metaverse.
I see this.
So there's this big battle and there's yelling in the metaverse and they're stomping off and you get a metaverse timeout and you can't drive the car in the metaverse and all these things and stuff like that. So if we can push all the conflict to the metaverse.
Dad, my ether is down to zero. How come I don't have any more ether? I need some more Bitcoin. Can I borrow?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There we go. All right. That's the best answer ever, Michael, to this question, because it's funny, but it's a real challenge. Yeah. I think I'm going to tell my kids we're only going to fight. And they're going to be like, what are you talking about, Dad? all right. All right. Prediction time. What's going to happen with, I'll say voice. And we've been talking about voice and AI a little bit broader. So voice and AI in the next year or so. What's your prediction?
Well,
2022.
So... yeah, that's another good question, because last year I certainly didn't foresee NFTs taking off the way they did. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really just exploded all over everything. For better or for worse, we'll see. This year with voice, it is the one thing that came out of the pandemic, I think, that was valuable. Mm-hmm. It's the case that people and companies had to learn how to communicate without you being physically in front of them. Mm-hmm. And we have the voice ability to provide that capability or to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. So it became more accepted. It wasn't as weird for me to be on a Zoom call with someone or to be on a mobile phone talking with someone. From the voice capabilities, I am excited because I hear of companies that are developing multilingual models. And again, I'm bilingual, so that does resonate, no pun intended, that resonates with me, is I would love to be able to sit down y hablar en español a tú para las cosas que son importantes a mí.
Got it.
Even though you may not be able to understand my language. So again, I see that and I applaud those companies for going after multilingual capabilities, not just because it's a nice to have, but because they realize, again, it serves a social good. And by the way, it's a new capability that sets me apart from my competitors.
Got it. Got it. Good answer. Yeah. I mean, the pandemic has changed how we communicate, and actually not only how do we do it remotely, but multilingual and bringing that in. All right. How about crystal ball? Rub your crystal ball. 10 years from now.
10 years. Ooh.
10 years. You can do 5. Whatever works.
Well, 5 is too easy. I mean, Gardner and others do 5 years. I'll leave that to them. That's the easy stuff. In 10 years, I really believe that, again, voice will be a natural option for people to use to communicate with their devices. Mm-hmm. It won't be harder to use than a keyboard. And it will be able to understand more than it does today. That's an easy one. But it'll be able to discuss things with me or bring things to my attention in context. And that's the key part. Not just, here's your news. It's on the newspaper every day. And I'm interested in that thing. Oh, well, since last time you were interested in it, let me vocalize and tell you about that thing based on how do you sound, sleepy, sad, tired, mad, glad. Maybe I won't tell you about the car that your son just drove into a tree because you sound tired and angry and it's after five. That's what I would see in 10 years.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're saying not only kind of AI that understands contextually what's happening, but also understanding emotion, your emotional state. All right. Well, I always say that in 10 years, we're all going to have a get together, have a few beers, and we'll look at our predictions. You're cordially now invited to the prediction party, and we can see how horribly wrong we got it. Maybe we got a few right, but I like that. I do think that makes sense. I do think that that's the direction things are going, and I think it'll be an improvement. AI, I'd like more of the I. Right? We got a lot of
keep in mind, AI is a big world. You know,
we got a lot of A's. We have an awful lot of A. The I is pretty crude still. So
the I is the hard part. Yeah, that is. I would concur with that.
Yeah,
I'll have a virtual beer with you in the metaverse on that one.
There we go. All right. Hey, Michael, if people want to keep in contact with what you're doing, what's the best way to do so?
Currently, the best way to keep up with me are on two of my favorite channels, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Okay.
That's usually where I'm posting a majority of my content. My LinkedIn handle is IoT Michael Novak.
Okay.
And my Twitter handle is Mr. Nova, as in new.
Got it. All right. Well, I will definitely put those in the show notes. So I know you're quite active in both of those. So it's a great way to keep in contact.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This was fun just to
talk
about some of these good issues of privacy and how we're trying to attack it as it relates to voice. Some of these principles we're developing with Open Voice, but also in the federal government. And I do have to mention as well, the federal government does have a national AI initiative right now. And again, they move slow, but this is going to become a major force for not just the federal and state and local governments, but for the private sector that does anything with the federal government.
Oh, so absolutely. Which is a
good
huge part of our economy and hugely important. And so I know people like to dismiss what the government does without thinking of how important it is in everyday lives, everything we do.
Absolutely.
And all those private businesses that do business with the government. So I think some big changes are coming, so to speak. But hey, thank you so much. I was super excited to have you on because I knew we could talk for a long time. We share a lot of common interests, and I just love hearing about your deep thinking. You're one of the people, when I talk to you, I sometimes end the conversation with more questions than answers, and that's the biggest compliment I have, is
when someone really makes me think.
So yeah. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate the time.
All right. Well, great. Well, that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.